From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks, and this is On Point. Over the past two decades, Fox News has been a powerful force in the rise of conservative media in the United States. That ascent has helped Fox become the most watched cable news station in the country. The network openly cheers for and supports President Trump, who returns the favor as one of its most ardent viewers and public supporters. Now, an explosive article in The New Yorker by Jane Mayer makes the case that Fox has veered from political boosterism to becoming a virtual propaganda arm for the White House. As a result, the Democratic National Committee said this week it won't allow Fox to participate in any of its primary debates ahead of the 2020 election. This hour On Point, the power of Fox News and its relationship with President Trump. You can join us. What do you make of this? Do you see Fox News as a kind of state TV? Is it offering real news or propaganda? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And joining us now from Hampstead, New York, is Joseph Perenin. He was president of Fox News from 1995 to 1996. He's currently professor of journalism at Hofstra University and New York University. Joe Perenin, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, and I'm really delighted to have you. So I want to start by talking a little bit about the Jane Mayer piece in The New Yorker. She offers a view of Fox News that has really making the case that Fox News has really tipped toward a kind of state TV, or at least a too close association and cooperation with President Trump's White House. What did you take away from her piece?
Well, I took away just what you just said. First of all, I do want to make it clear that Fox News has many fine journalists, Chris Wallace, Shepard Smith, Brett Baer. I mean, there are very many fine journalists there, and they're usually on in daytime. The time when cable television makes money is at night in prime and early in the morning. That's the most highly sought after ad time. And that's where Fox News is opinion. And its opinion is reflective of what the Trump administration, at least I see or hear, what the storyline is that supports Trump. In fact, they've crossed the line in some cases beyond even champions of Trump to maybe even working for Trump, it almost appears, when you listen to what some of them have to say. And this is different than anything I've ever experienced in my 40 years in broadcast journalism, which was at CBS and also at Fox and at NBC. And that is, I covered presidents. I covered every president from Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush. That's about as far as I got, but I never had a situation where a news organization is so closely aligned with a president, or a White House is so closely aligned with a news organization. And that, to me, is very unhealthy.
Well, I want to talk to you about why that is. But first, a couple of examples from Jane Mayer's writing here. You talked about instances of Fox working with and for the president. So she talks about a couple of points here. She alleges that Fox allegedly killed a story by one of its own reporters before the 2016 election that President Trump tried to pay off porn star Stormy Daniels to conceal his affair with her. That's one example. The other revelation from Jane Mayer is that President Trump allegedly attempted to use the antitrust process to punish CNN by trying to stop the merger between AT&T and Time Warner, which owns CNN. So those are two pretty dramatic cases, if true, of Fox News working in support of the president. And your point is that kind of cooperation is something pretty new with Fox relative to the history of TV journalism, right?
From my experience, it's unprecedented.
Yeah.
And it is very concerning, to say the least. And it is in large part played a role in the divisions that we have in our country.
So say more about that. How so?
Well, when you're let me, if I may, go back to when I met with Rupert Murdoch back in 1995 and a couple of other Fox News executives, Rupert made it clear to me he hated CNN, and he didn't like Ted Turner, and he wanted to have a proper news organization. So he, in his own mind, wanted to have a powerful news organization. And I understood from my time there that his interest is in wielding power for business purposes, because he is an amazing businessman, and he saw it as an opportunity, which is something he has done in England and in Australia, use a news organization to help his business. What happened after that is that when they hired me as president, as time went on, I found that Rupert was really the one most interested in having a powerful news organization. And a year after I was hired as president, Fox hired Roger Ailes to be chairman of news and cable. So technically I was to report to him, and I knew Roger from Washington because I was the Washington bureau chief and a White House producer, and he of course had a lot of influence in Republican campaigns. And Roger and I went out and had a discussion, and he basically told me that he didn't know anything about news. In fact, what he said was, I don't know anything about news. I need you to stay with me. But then he was concerned that I may be liberal. So alarm bells started going off. He pointed out that I worked for the Communist Broadcasting System previously, CBS.
Right.
And then after we got through that little discussion, he told me that he wanted to create an alternative news channel, and it to serve the people out there he felt were not being served by any of the media that existed. Sort of a hearkened in my mind the thought of the silent majority from Richard Nixon, who of course Roger Ailes advised. But Roger said he wanted to target this audience, and he felt there was an business opportunity there to do that, and that he would be building that going forward with a cable channel was the concept that he had in mind. And I in short order, went home and told my wife, I can't do alternative news, and so that's why I resigned. But that's
now, wait,
exactly
I want to just jump in there because I'm interested. Why not? I mean, what did that mean to you? What did that sort of signal to you, this idea of we're going to do alternative news?
Well, I worked in the news business for CBS News, and unlike what Roger thought, I didn't think it was the Communist Broadcasting System. I thought, because I, in fact, did work very hard to provide what I thought was balanced and fair coverage throughout my career. And to have him attack the media, the news, existing news organization, CBS, NBC, ABC, I thought was inappropriate. And it certainly signaled to me that he was not going to be interested in providing what I would consider news, fair and balanced, if I can coin a term, right?
Yeah, right.
But he would be interested in providing news for an audience, news that they would want to hear, news that would reinforce their views. And I did not want to be in the business of altering a story to make it more appealing or to cover stories or to not cover stories based on what I thought my audience wanted to hear.
Right, that sort of goes against...
So that was alarming to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that really contradicts a sort of basic tenet of journalism.
Well, so that's what I learned. Those were my principles.
Interesting. Well, let's hear from Roger Ailes because we've got some tape. This is back in 2010. Just to remind people, he was chairman of Fox News from the network's inception in 1996 until 2016. So here he is in 2010 during an interview with the Hoover Institution, and he describes his initial vision for Fox News.
What I recognized was the American people didn't want to be told what to think about the information they were receiving. So we came up with We Report, You Decide, Fair and Balanced. We've never told anybody what not to say. We've never not booked any liberal on the network that wants to be on. We just want a dialogue.
So, Joe Pernin, to hear Roger Ailes there, that sounds okay as a kind of part of a journalistic mission.
If it was true.
Okay.
But I think if you look at what well, let me take me.
Yeah.
I was interviewed by Al Franken for his book some years ago. I told the story that I just told here. It was in the book. Roger didn't know it. I was appearing on something called the Strategy Room. They were streaming with their talent being interviewed by Kilmeade or whomever as a political advisor or at least a news media advisor. And I was on for a year or two, and suddenly I was told I couldn't be on anymore. And I asked why, and I was told Roger found out what I said in the book. So, and clearly he thought I was liberal, and clearly he did not like what I said, so that was it. And that's a small example, but that is the way things operate. The idea was to be able to, in news, to get ratings. You need to keep your viewer engaged as long as possible. The longer you keep your listeners engaged, the higher your ratings. When you are on cable, you have unending amounts of time, but if you know what your audience wants and you play to that and you reinforce it, they will be engaged. So therefore, you could do an hour in cable, and you could start off by saying, we have lots of ways in which Hillary Clinton has totally destroyed this country. We're going to break them down over the next hour. Please stay with us, and that audience is going to stay there because they believe that. And that's kind of, I've oversimplified it, but that's the notion of what they are doing. They are driving their audience through by giving them information that reinforces their belief, and that audience does not feel at all comfortable sampling anything else. They're not the only ones now, but that's basically what they're doing. And Trump is using that audience. That's the audience he needs, because when you do that, you mobilize the audience, they go to the polls and they vote, and they support you.
Right, and that's what's happening, and we're going to be talking about this a lot more the rest of the hour. But Joe Perrington, we have to let you go. I'm sorry about that, but I want to thank you for joining us today. We're very grateful.
Well, I'm going on to class. Well, thank you very much. Have a good day.
All right, that's the former president of Fox News, Joe Perrington. You can join the conversation. What's your take on Fox News? I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking about the influence of Fox News and its ties to the White House, the Trump White House. You can join the conversation. Should we distinguish between the reporters on Fox and its opinionated primetime hosts? How is the perceived liberal bias at a network like MSNBC, for example, any different than Fox's apparent pro-Trump bias? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And joining us now from West Lafayette, Indiana, is Nicole Hemmer. She's a professor in presidential studies at the University of Virginia. She wrote an opinion piece for CNN.com this week with a headline, Why the Trump-Fox News Relationship is Unprecedented. Nicole Hemmer, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Also joining me from Austin, Texas is Dylan Byers. He's a senior media reporter at NBC and MSNBC. Dylan, great to have you on Point as well. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Nicole, let me start with you. We were talking earlier about this really fascinating piece in this week's New Yorker from Jane Mayer. And in your piece for CNN.com, you wrote of her piece, "The story makes clear in vivid detail that Mayer's answer to the headline question about Fox News, is it propaganda, is a resounding yes." Tell us why. Why did you conclude that?
Well, I think for a few reasons. First of all, one of the things that's unprecedented about this relationship is the personnel entanglement between Fox News and the Trump administration. Now, this is something people have noticed over the past 3 years as Roger Ailes went to advise the Trump campaign, as Trump hired people like Bill Shine, who was the co-president of Fox News, when he put forward Heather Nauert, who was a Fox and Friends host, for the UN ambassadorship. But what Mayer does is she puts all of those details into one story. And so you can really see the interplay between Fox and the Trump administration in ways that go beyond just messaging, right? That there are actual personnel who have a revolving door between the network and the White House. And that's pretty unprecedented. And then you add on top of that the behind-the-scenes news that Mayer broke that you talked about a little bit earlier. And it's a pretty compelling case.
Right. And just to bring listeners up to date who might not have been with us at the top of the hour, we're talking about a couple of revelations that Jane Mayer talked about, that President Trump allegedly attempted to use the antitrust process to punish CNN by trying to stop essentially the merger between AT&T and Time Warner, which owns CNN. So this would have been punitive to CNN, which the president does not like. So according to Jane Mayer, Trump ordered Gary Cohn, director of the National Economic Council, to pressure the Justice Department to intervene. So that's a pretty, if that allegation is true, that's a pretty amazing revelation.
It absolutely is. And it gives the stronger sense of a kind of quid pro quo between the sort of pro-Trump messaging of Fox News and how the Trump administration is supporting Fox. I mean, Trump supports Fox every time he tweets out about segments, right? He's offering advertising, really, for the network. But if these behind-the-scenes accounts really are true, then he's doing a lot more than that.
Yeah. So, Dylan Byers, I mean, I posed the rhetorical question when we came back from the break. How is this different, or is it different? I mean, there's a perceived liberal bias at MSNBC, for example, where you work. How is that different than the perceived pro-Trump bias at Fox News, in your view?
That's a great question. The differences are actually pretty stark, and I don't think you can deny that media has become a lot more balkanized in the 21st century. The business proposition of media, of feeding into outrage or partisan anxiety, that seems to be the going business model on cable news. And that is even true at CNN, where I used to work, at a place that nominally is trying to straddle the line between both sides of the political spectrum. That is the business we are in. I think the difference is that pre-Fox News in the Trump era, there's a standard, a sort of expectation of integrity that no matter what your political biases may be, you adhere to a certain sense of facts. You also adhere to a certain sense of news judgment, so that when major events happen, say in the Mueller investigation into President Trump, you don't ignore that and instead go on a tirade against, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or Hillary Clinton simply because you don't want to address the news of the day. That is the business that Fox is in. Fox is in the business, Fox News, and you guessed earlier, pointed out, there are distinctions between some of the journalists, the true journalists, the Chris Wallaces of Fox News, and then the opinion arm at Fox News. But when we talk about Fox News as a cultural phenomenon and when we talk about its influence in the world, the people who have that influence truly are the opinion arm, from the morning show to the primetime hours. And those folks, the idea that they're working almost in concert, and in some cases very much in concert with the Trump administration, takes this to a level that MSNBC, CNN, New York Times, Washington Post, any other news organization has not gone with a presidential administration. And I think that is really significant. And, you know, Nicole brings up a great point about the revolving door between the White House and Fox News. That is not merely scandalous because it of quid pro quo, or because it gives the impression of, you know, people doing favors for one another. Those are lines of communication that are open and are flowing all day long between the West Wing and the C-suite at Fox News.
Yeah, and Nicole, that revolving door, you mentioned a couple of names quickly, and I just want to sort of stress one or two of them again for listeners who might not be familiar with these people. Bill Shine, former co-president of Fox News, has moved to become director of communications for the White House and deputy chief of staff. I mean, that's a pretty startling case of the revolving doors. Other names include John Bolton, former Fox News to national security advisor. As you mentioned, Trump nominated Heather Nauert from Fox and Friends to become UN ambassador. She's a spokesman at the UN, but the nomination to become UN ambassador has not come to be. But that's there are other names as well. So we're really talking about a very active. Go ahead, Dylan.
Can I just point out on those names? All of those names matter. It's all significant. The name that really matters is Bill Shine, far and above the rest. And the reason is because Bill Shine and Sean Hannity are extremely close friends, the best men at each other's weddings. They talk on the phone every day. There is not, you know, again, it's this line of communication between the White House and Fox News that is just constantly open. And so the decisions that are being made by the White House and the decisions that are being made at Fox News, and it's very often to tell what's the chicken and what's the egg and who's leading whom, that is an ongoing conversation as much as, you know, the conversations happening among two executives in adjacent offices at the Fox News building.
Let's listen to a couple of bits of tape here to make the point. President Trump and Fox News host Sean Hannity are known to have a pretty close relationship. It's been reported that they speak on the phone multiple times each week. So last November, the president invited Hannity onto the stage to address his supporters one day before the midterm election.
I had no idea you were going to invite me up here. And the one thing that has made and defined your presidency more than anything else: promises made, promises kept.
So now, after a backlash following that appearance by Sean Hannity, Fox News released a statement saying, quote, Fox News does not condone any talent participating in campaign events. But here's another instance. President Trump has made no secret that he's a supporter of a bunch of people at Fox News. So during a rally last October, he went as far as to call out the names of some of his favorite Fox News personalities.
Do we like Tucker? I like Tucker. How about Angela, Brian? We got a lot of great friends.
So the president there was talking about three hosts, Tucker Carlson, Ainsley Earhart, and Brian Kilmeade. Nicole, I want to come back to you and this point that Dylan made about the sort of most important name, Bill Shine, who is now, now at the White House, directing the Office of Communications at the White House. Is there evidence? Have you noticed evidence of how this relationship with the press has changed under Bill Shine, for example? Do we know anything about that?
Well, you know, Bill Shine's hire came after he left Fox News, but I think that this this connection with Hannity as well is a really important way of understanding how the messaging kind of everyone stays on the same page. And when they move on to different pages, it has a major effect. So one of the places where we saw this was with the looming government shutdown. President Trump had, by and large, agreed to a deal that would prevent that shutdown, but received so much backlash, including on Fox News, and pays real attention to especially those moments when people like Sean Hannity, who he listens to, are pushing back against him, that it actually changed what Trump did. He backed out of the deal. He shut the government down for the longest government shutdown in American history. And that kind of interplay, those moments in particular, I think are especially telling because it's not just a matter of we love one another, right? We're going to promote one another and pat one another on the back. But what is said on Fox News and what is said in the nightly phone calls that Sean Hannity has with President Trump really does have an influence on how the president acts.
Mm. Listeners, we're talking about Fox News and its very close relationship with President Trump. You can join the conversation. Do you think Fox has crossed a line in its coverage of President Trump from mere political boosterism, which already might be problematic when it comes to a house of journalism, to outright propaganda? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's go to Sue. She's calling from Swainsboro, Georgia. Sue, thanks for the call. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm no political expert or anything. Just based off of your question, I was born and raised in Indianapolis, Indiana, grew up in Atlanta after high school, and you know, I have not experienced racism like I have here in what is called Trump country. And so, like, I mean, you can see Trump 2020 banners all over the place. And in the restaurants, in the gas stations, everywhere is Fox News. You know, there's nothing else. Anything else is fake news. And I hate to say it or hate to sound cliche, but I mean, this is deep, deep South. And some of the, I guess, propaganda rhetoric that is coming from, you know, well, I've now been forced to see Fox News places, but it's just like it has to be propaganda. There has to be something. Just all I can describe it as is there seems to be this unbalanced, very ignorant obsession with something. And, you know, I was a person that, you know, now I'm not proud to say it, but I wasn't political. I didn't vote before now, but now I'm, you know, getting involved in voting all I can. I've been told to go back to where I'm, you know, where I come from. I've been called the N-word for as many times. I mean, and I grew up in Indiana where racism is definitely known. Martinsville is the right. is the capital of KKK, but it's just like, you know, there has to be something going on with that news outlet.
Sue, I'm glad you put this point on the table, and I really appreciate your experience. So let me take that point on board. Nicole, I want to get you to respond to Sue, because, I mean, she seems to be making a link between, well, not a link. I mean, she's sort of making the case that this kind of influence really matters, this kind of power of influence that she's observing in the South, for example, really matters. Do you agree
right.
with that?
Well, I think it's worth taking a closer look at the dynamic that she's talking about, particularly the dynamic between watching Fox News and how you express your political beliefs. Because I think sometimes there's kind of a too simple way that we talk about the influence of Fox News, right? That Fox News viewers watch it and it gives them their talking points for the day, and then they go out and they share those talking points. But we don't necessarily pay a lot of attention to the beliefs that the viewers already bring to the table. It's more interactive, I think, than most of us consider when we talk about the influence of conservative media, that viewers come to the table with their own sets of belief. And one of the things that watching Fox News allows them to do is sometimes feel more comfortable sharing those beliefs, gives them sometimes a language for talking about their politics, and in recent years has raised the temperature of the rhetoric that people use. I mean, one place we can point to her point is Tucker Carlson and his elevation on Fox News. He has a tendency to promote more I would actually call them white nationalists, but I think more racial populist kinds of points that then get amplified and move to the center of many people's ideas about conservatism. And it's that kind of interplay that I think is worth paying attention to.
Let's take another call. Maria is calling from Richmond, Virginia. Maria, you're on the air. It's good to have you. Thanks.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. So I have a comment kind of with a question for you guys. As a Muslim student in the United States, I have seen the progression of Fox News because I thought it was important to see both sides of the coin when it came to the news media. And since I think, you know, since 2008 to now, there has definitely been a dramatic increase in the skewing of facts and the, you know, varied use of terminology in order to try and create their own point of view. And I don't think that this is just a problem with Fox News. I think this is an issue that has been happening with several other mainstream media outlets, but it is the most prominently seen in Fox News. So I have kind of a two-pronged question. How does a, you know, average citizen who is trying to be informed politically, economically, avoid the propaganda circle and circus? And is there a possible way, is there any possible way for the news media environment to change, and what would it take?
Boy, those are big questions. Maria, thank you so much. Nicole, we're coming up against a break in just a minute. So can you take a stab at that for just the next 10 or 15 seconds, and we'll pick up the conversation after the break?
Sure. It's a huge, huge question. And one part of the answer is to read widely. One way to get out of the trap of reading only things that you agree with is to read widely and to question things when they confirm your prior beliefs. That's always a good time to do a little bit more research. The things you want to believe most are the things that you should bring real skepticism to. And then the other question about...
I'm going to ask you to hold the other idea until after the break, but I think your idea to read widely and bring a lot of skepticism to the table... Always great advice. Listeners, you can join this conversation. What do you think of this close relationship between Fox News and President Trump? What does it say about the state of our political discourse and the state of journalism, TV journalism in this country? I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking about Fox News and a revealing article in The New Yorker that paints the picture of a cable news network that speaks for President Trump and of a revolving door between a news network and the White House. So Fox News was created by Rupert Murdoch and officially launched in October of 1996. And earlier that year, Murdoch outlined his vision for the 24-hour news service channel that would be an insurgent force, as he saw it, among a strong group of established network challengers.
It's a hell of a challenge to be up against the likes of ABC, NBC, CBS, and even CNN. But the opportunity exists for an island of difference in the sea of sameness in television news today.
There's Rupert Murdoch back in October of 1996. You can join the conversation. Do you regard Fox News as a response to that sea of sameness that he was talking about? Are we making too much of its close relationship with President Trump, or do you see a real danger here that it's really working in tandem with the White House? Joining me are Nicole Hemmer. She's professor of presidential studies at the University of Virginia, and Dylan Byers, senior media reporter for NBC News and MSNBC. And I want to ask you both, Nicole and Dylan, to pick up on Maria's point. That was the caller just before the break. How do we protect ourselves from forces like Fox that are out there using opinion to construct, you know, what is really a counter narrative and providing a particular political point of view? And Nicole, you were saying it begins with skepticism and reading a lot, but you were going to continue with that thought. Then I want to come to you, Dylan, on the same question.
Yes, the only thing that I was going to add was in the second part of her question, she asked, how do we change this environment? Mm-hmm. And I'm a bit of a pessimist on this question, I think, because as long as there are economic and political incentives to have the media environment that we have, and as we can see from this administration, there are a lot of economic and political incentives to the current media environment. It's just going to be very, very difficult to change things.
Yeah. Dylan, what's your view on this? Are you a pessimist?
look, let me answer the question first about how to the caller.
Sure.
Read widely for sure. And also what I would say is don't put too much stock in cable news. There is a really smart essay in The New York Times recently by Tim Wu, a legal scholar, called The Oppression of the Supermajority, in which he talks about how the story of our time is not hyper-partisanship. The story of our time is actually that the vast majority of people agree on pretty common sense policy issues, but that they're sort of being oppressed by a minority of extremists on both sides of the aisle who have taken control of the airwaves, especially on the internet. And I guess what I would say is read widely, but read, you know, what Rupert Murdoch identified in the mid-90s is that the cable news business is a business and that news is not a requirement. It is a value proposition. The idea that we are going to inform you, the idea that we are going to bring you smart analysis or something like that, that is a pitch to the viewer. But at the end of the day, Fox News, it doesn't have a responsibility to actually be a news network. And it is no longer a news network, by and large. I mean, it's really become something closer, certainly, to a propaganda outfit for the Trump White House. So I guess what I would say is don't, you know, at any given point, the population of people watching the three cable news networks is less than the population of New York City. So don't let it overtake your understanding of what the rest of the country is really talking about. Hmm. And then in regard to the question of am I a pessimist, look, I think that the best thing that the news industry can do in looking at Rupert Murdoch's success at Fox News over the last two decades is think more about what it takes to be a business. Think more about what it takes to create something that people actually want to watch, that people feel really engaged with. Every media executive, no matter their politics, should be envious of just how engaged Rupert Murdoch's audience is. And there are ways to create that don't cater to the sort of fear and outrage and in many cases now xenophobia of the Fox News faithful.
Well, on a point that I think is related to that, let me go to Max, who's calling from Albany, Georgia. Max, you're on the air. It's good to have you. Thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is this. If we're able to make the case that Fox News borders propaganda, how do we encourage or promote the right to generate a media outlet for themselves that may slant towards their ideals but not go as far as propaganda? It's discouraging for many out there, left or right, that Fox News seems to be the only choice for the right, and that choice seems to not necessarily be a good one.
Hmm. Nicole Hemmer, what do you hear in Max's question there? I guess I want to respond this way and sort of get your response, Nicole. But I mean, to me, it makes me sad when we're thinking about news organizations that have to appeal to, you know, folks who slant right or left, because that seems to lead to where we are today with Fox News.
I get the frustration with that. I do think that in many ways, it's dealing with realities rather than dealing with what we would hope for, especially when it comes to American conservatism, which for, you know, 50 or 60 years now has been had central to it this belief that other outlets are biased and only conservative media outlets are going to give you the real story. So if that is something that is not going to change anytime soon, what can be done? And in many ways, we're seeing some of what can be done in some of the new outlets that are emerging right now. Many people see an economic opportunity in this particular moment for people who do want exactly what Max wants, which is something that is conservative, but keeps them more tethered to reality. And so there are outlets like Bulwark, which is a new sort of anti-Trump but conservative publication. And Jonah Goldberg, who was at National Review, is getting ready to launch a more hard news focused conservative outlet. And I think that there's a discussion to be had as to how you can be both hard news and conservative. But I think that given where we are, that's something that I think will help to address some of the absences that Max is talking about.
Well, let me read a couple of comments from our listeners on our Facebook page that speak to this division that we've been making reference to here across the country. Ray Russell writes, "Much like CNN, PBS, and MSNBC were the mouthpiece for Obama, news outlets today are more activists than an outlet for news. And here's Mark Douglas Kyle, Richard II, as he identifies himself. He writes, well, with the rest of the media coverage being 90% negative stories about the Trump administration, I suppose he's going to cozy up with anyone willing to give him a fair shake. We should say, I don't think that 90% number would hold up to scrutiny, but we get the point. Let's go to another call. Martha is calling from Jefferson, Maine. Martha, you're on the air. It's good to have you. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wrote several books with a veteran journalist. One of them was called The Good Guys, the Bad Guys, and the First Amendment, and looked at the Fairness Doctrine. Fairness Doctrine was controversial because it regulated news, and you know, newspapers aren't regulated, and we have a First Amendment. Was that right? But, of course, it was at a time when there was a fiduciary responsibility for news organizations that broadcast over the air to air programs that had controversial subjects and use both sides of the issues to be fair and really be fair and balanced, not this bull that Fox says.
Martha, I'm going to jump in only because your line is sort of deteriorating, but we get the point that you put on the table, and I just wanted to clarify that was Martha Elliott. She's written three books with legendary journalist Fred Friendly at CBS. And Dylan, let me just come to you about the point about the Fairness Doctrine. Would that help? I mean, it doesn't really exist anymore. Do we need a Fairness Doctrine?
It sort of doesn't matter whether we want it or not, because we're not going to get it. The Fairness Doctrine is a relic of the 20th century. And so often when folks read stories like Jane Mayer's in The New Yorker about how far right Fox News has gone, about how close it is to the Trump administration, about how it ignores serious news of the day that reflects poorly on President Trump, they say, well, there used to be a time when you had to tell both sides. There used to be – again, I cannot stress this enough. The fact that Fox News has the word news in its title does not mean that it is beholden to news. There's nothing it's a business, and it's a business that caters to the fears and anxieties of largely disenfranchised rural Americans. Mm. But there's another point here about – that goes back to the earlier question, which is there an audience for a more moderate conservatism? Could there be another outlet for conservatives who maybe don't identify with the direction that Fox News has gone? Those folks are in the wilderness right now. I mean, the Weekly Standard, which used to be a sort of vanguard for a more moderate conservatism, that has gone away. There are publications like The Bulwark that are starting, but it is going to be a long road to create a really sort of compelling, exciting media outlet that walks the sort of moderate conservative line. But that doesn't mean it won't exist. And what I think the media organization should be careful of doing is, especially those that get pinned as being left of center, remember that there is that huge audience out there. Remember that there are a lot of conservatives who do have frustrations with Trump and do have frustrations with Fox News, but at the same time don't want to listen to a news outlet that is just constantly beating up on the Trump administration because it is President Trump. Mm. So there is an open aisle in the middle. It's just a question of figuring out how to turn that into something that is compelling and engaging for American audiences.
Nicole, I want to come to you. You address this question in your piece for CNN.org, and that is, haven't we been here before? I mean, you make the point that past presidents have cozied up to the media. This isn't the first time we've seen that. But I guess you sort of answer that question and say, well, yeah, that's true, but we're in a different place, right?
Right. Well, we could certainly cherry pick examples from the past of particular journalists. People like Arthur Kroc and Drew Pearson were very close to John Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson. Sid Blumenthal left to join the Clinton administration. So there are isolated instances in the past where we saw this. And there also was a media environment in the 1950s and 1960s where outlets didn't report on presidential sex affairs and misdoings. There was support or an amplification of government lies about the Vietnam War. So it's not that journalism has been perfectly practiced in the past, but those really were, those individuals were outliers. There's nothing on par with the personnel exchange between Fox News and the Trump administration. But also those journalists were still bound by a certain set of values and a belief in at least the ideal of objectivity, even if it wasn't always well practiced. And somebody like Sid Blumenthal, when he joined the Clinton administration, having been a journalist, was kind of disdained and made fun of by other journalists who thought he was crossing a line. And that lack of a line, I think, is part of the unprecedented part of this.
Let's see if
Anthony,
please go ahead.
A quick point to Nicole.
Yeah.
There's a lot in the Jane Mayer report in the New Yorker that is sort of noise that we're all familiar with, and it is basically this sense that Fox News is hyper partisan, hyper supportive of President Trump. And that falls under the category of something that offends liberal sensibilities, offends our understanding of what media should be in the 20th century, which it most certainly is not in the 21st century. But none of that is illegal. None of that is grounds for congressional investigation. However, there is the signal in the story, which is that which we brought up earlier, which is that there are at least three regulatory cases that have been made since Trump came into office in the media space that benefited Rupert Murdoch, including the sale of 21st Century Fox to Disney, including blocking Sinclair Broadcast Group's acquisition. And then most notably, the report, and this to me is the most significant aspect of Jane's report, which is that Trump ordered Gary Cohn and Chief of Staff John Kelly to get the Justice Department to block AT&T's takeover of Time Warner because he didn't like CNN and because it would benefit Rupert Murdoch. Now, Democrats on Capitol Hill are already calling for access to the sort of information about that to see what they can figure out. I don't know if anything's going to come of that. But when you talk about what is unprecedented about the relationship between the Trump White House and Fox News that distinguishes it from all of the other examples that Nicole brought up, that the idea that the president would use his position of power in order to influence business, in order to do favors for friends in the media and to disadvantage other media companies, that is what is really significant. And that is what is truly different about this.
So interesting, Dylan. I really thank you for making that final point. We've got a little bit of breaking news that is actually related to what we're talking about. So Bill Shine has resigned as White House Deputy Chief of Staff for Communications and will serve as a senior advisor on the 2020 Trump campaign. That, according to Washington Post and a bunch of other outlets. So we thought we'd just drop that in there. Well, listen, this has been a great conversation. Nicole Hemmer, professor of presidential studies at the University of Virginia. She's the author of Messengers of the Right, Conservative Media, and the Transformation of American Politics. The book came out in 2016. Nicole, thanks so much for joining us. We really, really appreciate it.
Great to be here, Anthony.
And Dylan Byers is a senior media reporter for NBC News and MSNBC. Dylan Byers, it's great to have you as well. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Really appreciate the conversation. Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast by going to onpointradio.org. I'm Anthony Brooks. Have a great weekend. Join us again Monday for On Point.